For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Thank you very much, David. Just want to mention before we begin that we had concluded a Rohatsu Sashin last Sunday, and I want to appreciate the effort of so many people who are here right now and who are not here in this room for supporting that event and for everyone coming together so nicely. And today, our speaker is our Tonto Douglas. And take it away, please.
It's showtime. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, what a crowd. I did not expect to see so many people. It's really nice, the fact that I think everyone who's in this Zendo was here participating in the celebration of Rohatsu, the celebration of the Buddha's enlightenment last week. And others who are on Zoom as well, which is exciting. I like the idea that the celebration of Rohatsu is an inspiration for people to dive into practice for what in effect becomes a new year of practice for us. That's certainly been the case for me. The chance to do additional sitting is wonderful. And I also very much appreciated Hogetsu's series of talks on the birth and life and enlightenment of Shakyamuni Buddha. And so the experience of the Rohatsu celebration, the Sashin, has stuck with me all week. And so in coming up with a topic for today, I not only wanted to follow my pattern of alternating talks about Zazen or some traditional Buddhist text with koans by picking a koan, and specifically, let's say it's a Rohatsu koan. It's a story from a collection of enlightenment stories prepared by Geisan Jokin, who was Dogen's Dharma great-grandson. That makes him seem much more distant from Dogen than he really was, because his teacher, Tetsu Gikai, had studied with Dogen before receiving transmission from Dogen's principal senior student, Koen Nejo, and Keizan himself had studied with Koen Nejo, so he was really more like a grand Dharma grandson of Dogen's than a great-grandson. But Keizan wrote a series of 100 enlightenment stories in called The Transmission of Light, the record of the transmission of light, the transmission of the light of awakening from 100 generations, from Shakyamuni Buddha himself, through the other Indian ancestors, the Chinese ancestors, to Japan, where he had stories for Dogen and Koen Nejo. And the very first, obviously, the very first story is the story of Shakyamuni Buddha's life and awakening. And then trying to tease out what it was that Shakyamuni understood, or what he recognized in his awakening, and teasing out the implications of that. And I apologize if I am confusing in my talk, because it's not easy to talk about these kinds of things, and we spend a lot of time with them. it's just difficult. There's the simplicity of our experience of sitting zazen and letting go of thoughts and emotions and feelings and judgments, all of what Suzuki Roshi used to call small mind, the mind that's related to things. I'm thinking about that. I feel this about that. I like that. I don't like that. This is bad. That's good. All of that. As we sit and let go of those things, our mind calms down and we open up to what Suzuki Roshi called big mind, the mind that is always a part of its surroundings, the mind that contains everything. We find ourselves, it's not just that we've been distracted, we've been caught up in our thoughts and feelings and emotions, and oh, well, we're not distracted anymore and I can see what's going on around here. It's the experience of sitting here and becoming, joining this moment, not just sitting here looking at the moment, but being this moment. And my feeling has always been that koans and a great deal of Buddhist literature are challenging us to experience, to understand, to recognize what the state of mind was of this Zen teacher, or Shakyamuni Buddha, when they made some statement. They're pointing words, they're pointing back to that Zazen mind. And we understand these scriptures and we understand koans best from Zazen mind. So Keizan's life of Shakyamuni Buddha is a little different from the one we're most familiar with. It's from about 200-year-old Zen history. And the story of Shakyamuni Buddha that he uses comes from various other records, but the actual important statement that he makes comes from one of these records that Dogen used too in the Eheikoroku and in Shobogenzo. And he wrote that Shakyamuni Buddha was of the sun race in India. At the age of 19, he leaped over the palace walls in the dead of night, and at Mount Dantaloka, he cut off his hair. Subsequently, he practiced austerities for 6 years. Later, he sat on the unshakable adamantine seat, where spiders spun webs in his eyebrows and magpies built a nest on top of his head. Reeds grew up between his legs as he sat tranquilly and erect without movement for 6 years. At the age of 30, on the 8th day of the 12th month, as the morning star appeared, he was suddenly enlightened. And these words are his very first lion's roar. Shakyamuni saw the morning star and achieved the way, and he said, "I, together with the great earth and all sentient beings, simultaneously achieve the way." So, "I, together with the great earth and all sentient beings, simultaneously attain the way." What in the world is he trying to convey with that? Because Shakyamuni becomes enlightened, that's some sort of psychological experience. How can you talk about the great earth? All these insentient beings, grasses and trees, fences and walls, tiles and pebbles, all of these things, whether alive or inanimate, how could they achieve the way with Shakyamuni Buddha? That's the big question that Keizan wants us to think about, to think about the nature of our life, the nature of our awakening. There's a hint of that, of what he's going for, I think, in his life of the Buddha. You know, he goes through the usual steps. So Shakyamuni Buddha goes over the wall. He runs away from home, leaving behind family, position, pleasure, comfort, security, position and respect of everyone, leaving all of this privileged life behind, and then takes on for 6 years a life of austerities where he not only renounces his privileged existence, he renounces ordinary human life, where he's living by begging, receiving little food, and he not only renounces comfort and pleasure, but he embraces discomfort for the sake of maybe numbing himself to ordinary sensations, feelings, emotions, and thoughts. But what's interesting is that when that doesn't work, he sits and meditates for 6 years. And the description is interesting because it insists that he immerses himself and becomes a part of the natural world. The spiders are making webs in between his eyebrows. A magpie makes a nest on top of his head. Grasses and reeds grow up around him and even underneath his seat. You know, you can imagine between his legs, he's just sort of peeking out over the top of these grasses. And having immersed himself with and become a part of the natural world, then he looks up and he sees the light of the morning star, and that light turns on the light switch in his head, and he recognizes what? Zen tradition would say he recognizes that the world and beings, insentient and sentient beings, are not separate, independent, enduring things, but that we live as interconnected, interacting beings, arising, co-arising dependently, moment to moment, is the activity of the entire world. So that's what happened when he saw the morning star. He woke up, he sees the morning star, and at that moment he recognizes that it's not that he's seeing the star, but he and the star coexist and arise together, along with everything else. So Keizan gives some more descriptions. Talks more about that experience and what happened. And he looks at it from somewhat different angles, just trying to clarify things, trying not to lead us astray. So he says, in his presentation or his explanation of what Shakyamuni said, the koan case, he says, this so-called I is not Shakyamuni Buddha. Even Shakyamuni Buddha also comes from this I. Not only does Shakyamuni Buddha come from it, but the great earth and all beings also come from it. Just as when a large net is taken up and all the many opens of the net are also taken up, when Shakyamuni Buddha was enlightened, the great earth and all beings were enlightened simultaneously. Not just the great earth and all beings, but all the Buddhas of the past, present, and future were also enlightened. So he's emphasizing that this I is not just the personal I. There is no separate, there was no, there is not now, a separate individual being called Shakyamuni Buddha. The I is what we would normally refer to as Buddha nature. This universe of interdependent, interacting, dependent, co-arising phenomena. And, but still, what does that mean that when Shakyamuni Buddha was enlightened, the whole world became enlightened? And that's what he's emphasizing, that this, our existence is this dynamic, interactive, interdependent whole, which includes all beings. And so in some sense, Shakyamuni's psychological awakening, his independent awakening, is the awakening of the awakening of the world. And to an extent, when Shakyamuni Buddha sees the morning star and wakes up and is with the morning star, the great earth, and all sentient beings, the great earth, the entire universe of the great earth and all sentient beings recognizes itself. And Shakyamuni, and Keizan wants to emphasize that he's talking about everyone is included in this I, in this Buddha nature. He says, do not think that it was just Shakyamuni Buddha who was enlightened. You must not see any Shakyamuni Buddha apart from the great earth and sentient beings. Even though mountains, rivers, and their myriad forms flourish in great abundance, none are left out of the pupil of Gotama's eye. All of you here, and the assembly is speaking to, all of you here are also established in the pupil of Gotama's eye. Not only are you established in it, but rather it is enfolded within you. The pupil of Gotama's eye becomes the fleshly body of all of you. It becomes the whole body of each person standing like an 80,000-foot precipice in each. Therefore, do not think that from the past to the present, there is an eye's bright pupil and distinct pupil. You distinct people are the pupil of Gotama's eye. Gotama is the entire body of each of you. So this reference to the eye is what it was, this truth that Shakyamuni Buddha recognized, and then also the reality that he recognized of this great boundless whole of existence, which includes all of us. We find ourselves in it, but it is all, it's present in us, in our physical form. There is no Buddha nature. There is no great I. There's no big self apart from each of us. And he insists on that with that your physical body enfolds this I, this Buddha nature. But he wants to insist that it is the entirety of the universe, of all beings, of all existence. It becomes awakened with Shakyamuni Buddha. You can't chop it up. So he says, if this is the way, what do you call this principle of enlightenment? Let me ask you, monks, does Gotama become enlightened with you, or do you become enlightened with Gotama? If you say that you become enlightened with Gotama, or the Gotama becomes enlightened with you, this is not Gotama's enlightenment. So that's still trying to carve out Gotama and the rest of the world, Gotama and you personally as independent things, or these independent things that are then related to each other on their own. Therefore, this is not the principle of enlightenment. If you want an intimate understanding of enlightenment, you should get rid of you and Gotama at once and quickly understand this matter of I. I is the great earth and beings as together with, as this inseparable relation, this inseparable interactivity. Together with is not I as the old fellow Gotama. Examine carefully, deliberate carefully, and clarify this I and this together with. Even if you clarify the meaning of I, but you fail to clarify together with, you lose the discerning I. So I go back and just point out again this idea of this all-encompassing whole made up of particular beings, entities, that are particular but are not independent and are not separate, that exist only in relation to everything else. And you probably noticed Kazan's reference to it's like a net. When Gotama becomes enlightened and becomes Shakyamuni Buddha, everything becomes enlightened. Everything is affected. This whole, the only reality becomes enlightened all at once, just as we are like an Indra's net, the net of interconnected beings. And if you tug on one end, you tug on the entire. You lift up one part of the net, all of the openings of the net are opened at once. All of these beings are embracing and mutually sustaining each other. And therefore, it is this whole of particular beings that awakens at once. But what Kazan also wants to emphasize that what's not happening is that Shakyamuni Buddha psychologically recognizes that we really form some sort of complete oneness, that we lose all particularity in some great absolute ideal Buddha nature, some absolute entity that takes form in us, that just appears to be us. And he says that I, and together with, are neither identical nor different. Truthfully, your skin, flesh, bones, and marrow are totally together with. The host of the house is I. It does not have skin, flesh, bones, and marrow. Nor is it the four elements or the four aggregates. Ultimately, if you wish to know the undying person in the hut, how could it be something separate from this present skin bag? Thus, do not think of it as distinct from the great earth of beings. Although the seasons change, and the mountains, rivers, and great earth are different over time, you should realize that because this is the old fellow Gotama, raising his eyebrows and blinking his eyes, all this is that body standing independently and openly within the myriad things. It brushes aside the myriad things or erases the myriad things and does not erase the myriad things. Fayan said, you cannot say that it brushes aside or does not brush aside things. And Dizan said, what do you mean by myriad things? So what does he mean when he's talking about I and together with are different things? He's trying to be clear that Buddha nature is not a thing. And it's especially not something that stands separately from the myriad things together that constitute the universe. I think I heard the metaphor from Barry Magid, a Zen teacher who was a Dharma heir of Joko Beck, and I think he stole it probably from David Hume. That this idea of I and the together with is just pointing out that all there is, the I, the together with, the Buddha nature, is just the relationship, the interactivity, the code-dependent co-arising nature of all reality. Not that it's a separate thing, then it's like, you know, you go to a university. This is the metaphor that Barry Magid uses, and I think David Hume used a church. And you say, oh, here are the students. Oh, I'm gonna visit the University of Chicago. Here, oh, there's some students. Is that the university? Here's the building. Is that the university? Here's the dormitory. Is that the university? There's the laboratory. Is that the university? There is no university separate from them. They're all in their interaction and their relationship. They create the university. But there's no entity university that takes form in each of these things. And our life is like that. The world is like that. So he continues with... what does this mean for Shakyamuni Buddha? When he realized this, how did that play out in his life? And he says, from the time of his enlightenment, for 49 years, he did not spend a day alone, but preached the Dharma for the assembly constantly. He was never without a robe and begging bowl. During that time, he preached to the assembly more than 360 times. Later, he transmitted the treasury of the eye of the true Dharma to Mahakashyapa, and it has been passed down from Mahakashyapa through generation after generation to the present. Truly, it has been transmitted through India, China, and Japan, where the practice of the true Dharma is based on it. The practices of his lifetime were the standard for his descendants. Even though he possessed the 32 marks and 80 minor marks of a Buddha, he looked like an ordinary monk and was no different from other people. Thereafter, after his appearance in the world, throughout the three times of the true Dharma, counterfeit Dharma, and the present collapsed Dharma, those who emulate his teaching and conduct model themselves on his deportment, use what he used, at each moment, walking about, standing in place, sitting or lying down, do as the Buddha did. Buddha after Buddha, patriarch after patriarch, have simply transmitted this so that the true Dharma is not distinguished. And this event clearly indicates this. Even though the method of expression of the Dharma, various stories, figures of speech, and words were different on the more than 360 occasions during the 49 years, there are nothing more in the expression of this principle. The principle of this situation, this world, is encompassing all beings inseparably, in constant interaction, co-creating each other. So, what does that mean for us? Well, it means that not only does the entire world share in the enlightenment of the Buddha, but the entire world shares in the suffering of each sentient being. And so what that should lead us to do is to resolve to practice diligently and to clarify what Shakyamuni recognized, and to realize it in our own lives, and to act for the awakening and well-being of all beings. Thank you very much. Okay, questions. Leo.
No, I was...
Okay. Thank you. Well, Nicholas has a question.
I don't have a question per se, but that was a really terrific talk. And I had so many inspired thoughts. I wish I could have written them down because I won't be able to remember many of them. But basically, it's kind of like there's this force, you know, that can turn a seed into a flower and an acorn into a big tree and an embryo into a baby, and this is the way, right? I love walking in today and everything time I come in here, there's that little sign that says, this is the way. It's like, everything's the way. You can't not be part of the way, in my humble opinion. You may not like it, you may have opinions about it, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But also there's this idea when you're talking about enlightenment and there's no university. Well, I would argue that there's no enlightenment either. And where is it, you know? So it's like, yeah, we all started as this cell in somebody's stomach and figured out how to grow into this. That is the way, you know? The Buddha is, he reaches enlightenment when he's looking at a star, and what is everything in the universe made of? Star dust, particles of exploding stars, right? So in the deepest sense, that we are all made of the exact same thing, whether it be a rock or, you know, they may be different elements, or I'm not a chemist or, you know, astrophysicist, but I hope you can get what I'm trying to say, is that it seems to me that yeah, we just, yeah, that the enlightenment, in quotes, is of course here. How could it not be? You know, watching my mother die, you know, it's like, she wasn't in control of that. This was her way. You know, it's like she's on the way up. It's just, yeah, so this idea that there's this magical enlightenment state, I think can get confusing for me anyway.
Yeah.
Because it causes me to devalue my actual experience, you know, and I think that's delusion, right? So I think that the way, the enlightenment, is just noticing the miracle in all the things. Thank you.
Thank you. And I appreciate the points you make, and I think that's right, that we tend to think of enlightenment is this one-time special experience in which we experience or perceive something. I don't know. It's like the word kensho that's used in a lot of Zen Buddhism, where, you know, you contemplate, so you see the self. Is it the self or something different from what we see right here? It is and it isn't, right? I mean, it is this, but Buddha's awakening was seeing through this idea that he was separate from the world, that all the things of the world were separate from each other. But this is something we already recognize. We see it all. We have this experience all the time, and maybe don't think about it. It's not some exotic special experience. It's the experience of being right here with the world, in the world, connected with the world, and saying, oh, right. You know, and that's what Dogen was talking about in Fukan Zazegi, when he'd say, okay, you know, you have to put down these judgments and thinking and measuring and like and dislike, good or bad, right or wrong. You have to step back from all of this thinking and these emotions and feelings. Don't get caught up in, I like that, I don't like, that's wrong, this is right. And when you do, then your original face, this I of together with, or Buddha nature, appears before you. But it appears right here, it looks just the way it did before. But your orientation is different. Our challenge is living from that experience that we recognize that we've had before. Let that put learning to.
And a mystery.
And a mystery, you know? And Dogen does that in the instructions to the Senzo Kyoku. He says several times, he'll talk about, okay, you want to know what to do when you're the cook, how you work. You take the backward step that shines the light. You let go of these thoughts and feelings and emotions, and then you come back and you do your task. You start chopping the vegetables, you clean the pots, whatever. And understand, perhaps, or understand the work is not something, my activity, but it's always an interactivity. That this is, happens in the light of the world and between me and the pot, or me and the vegetables and the chopper. It's the great mystery. It's the challenge for us.
Werner Erhard used to say, enlightenment is the booby prize.
Yeah.
So thank you for bringing this forth. I've been thinking about this a lot, about what is awakening, what is enlightenment. And this really helped because it's not only the eye, like I, but it's the eye, like eyeball. And this isn't fully formed, but my sense is that we're endeavoring. It's not just that we don't get caught up or we let go completely of likes and dislikes, but that it doesn't get in the way of us really seeing everyone and everything. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, a lot of the endeavor just here and now, let's say in our culture, is that when people feel unseen, when the planet feels unseen in its true nature, there's hell to pay. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of distress in not being seen, and that means being valued and having the space to blossom into a lotus. So I've been thinking about this, like, this enlightenment is not like some enlightenment. It is the ability to see and be seen fully. And so in modern, you know, right now, let's say not modern, what age we're in, postmodern, post-capitalist, who knows, but this endeavor that we feel to take on barriers to being seen, whether it's being able to see queer identity, anti-colonialism, this is part of this growth process of wanting to see more deeply and include everyone. So I feel that this is really well, beautifully brought forth by you in discussing this Denkoroku piece. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank
you for this talk. I also liked the your choice of words between attain and recognize, because I've always had a problem with the sentence, you know, I and the whole world have attained enlightenment or awakening simultaneously. And it has always kind of reminded me in a way of that old, I don't think it's a koan, but that riddle about if a tree falls in a forest and there's no one around to hear it, does it make a sound? And I, you know, early on in people asking me that, I said, well, yeah, of course it makes a sound, but then, you know, there's also, like, what is sound? Sound is something happens, but there's no one around to interpret it, so is it actually sound? And I think this is similar, you know, that things are happening. Whether we perceive them or not, and when we can sit down, we perceive a little bit more. And so maybe that's attaining the way. Maybe it's recognizing the way. You know, it's, and if no one recognizes the way, then is it the way? You know, or is things are happening. It's not that maybe everything suddenly changed, but that our ability to be available and perceive whatever, the suffering in ourselves and recognize that, oh, everyone else is suffering similarly, then maybe we can do something to help. But yeah, I've just always had that difficulty. And I like, and I, and, and So, you know, saying the word recognize really helps me.
Great. You know, I think Dogen tries to just avoid all of those problems, because when he talks about Buddha, he talks so much about Genjo Koan, which is the world as it's manifested to us.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew, sorry.
I was resonating with some of the same themes of your description of the people of the Buddha's eye and the oneness and separateness, and there's both the way that Rohatsu was really lovely in kind of reminding us of how we see the way together as a community. But there's also this way I've been sitting with what's in the rest of the world, like the media reaction, the social media reaction to Luigi Mangione, and like we've created this world of cycles of violence and exclusion as well. And as we think of our broader society as a sangha, that we're also either experiencing all of samsara or nirvana with at the same time. Let me see if I could phrase this as a question. How are you practicing this interbeing in this world today?
I try to think of every action as much as possible, try to be aware of, recognize that all of my actions are interactions that take place within this large perspective of everything going on. And that sort of tends to whittle away at concerns about being personally validated as an important person or a good person, something like that, and allows to focus more on sharing whatever is going on, including the unhappiness or suffering of other beings, trying to work with that, trying to perceive and act as a part of the whole world. And I think that that's less abstract and vague in real life than it sounds when we talk about it.
Yeah. And we should wrap up with maybe one more comment.
Keith.
Yeah. Well, but first I wanted to say when Hogetsu, when we were sitting and she said, talked about the forest of trees and roots and the branches reaching up in the sky, and the image came into my head was, you know, what we're learning about roots and trees and the ways that there's this network and trees communicate with each other even across species through fungal networks and sending chemicals, and then, you know, that fit with your talk about the interconnection of all beings and the myriad things. About you know, the ways that we communicate and like I said, how do you put this knowledge into practice and then I was thinking about likes and dislikes on you know, in that groups and a part of a WhatsApp group. And I made some comments about violence, and then this person on the group who has been kind of dominating it said I was being violent, stupid, and then somebody else I know like decided that he was disgusted and, you know, left the group. But you know, I stayed in it, and then the person called me violent, stupid. We actually did end up agreeing on some things, but I think that goes with your you know, when and I'm, you know, observe myself, like if I say something and somebody does a thumbs up or a heart or whatever, it does, you know, it makes you feel good, right? I mean, that's what they're, I mean, Facebook and all that, that's what they're selling. But
learning to, like you said, right, you know, distance yourself from that and not get too and not get enmeshed in the likes and dislikes, but, you know, but keep the connection going, right? Or recognize, you know, the value in the connection. Anyway, I think these days that's important to model for other people how to get, not to get too enmeshed in the likes and the dislikes.
Well, should we close with the Bodhisattva vows and announcements?
Yeah.
Realize it.